greatest blessings we have are our friends and loved ones. So it seems appropriate tonight to talk about one of the ways we keep that love and friendship alive, the sending of Christmas cards. This year, if you want to send cards that are recognized for their beauty and distinction, and by the wonderful way they have of saying what is in your heart, visit the friendly store that carries Hallmark cards. And now to preside over our program, here is your Hallmark host, Les Tremaine.
Thank you, Tom Shirley, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight we bring you a star whose life reads an adventure story. South America, Mexico, Honolulu, Alaska, the South Seas, the Orient, all have been ports of call for Van Heflin. Then he saw still more of the world during his 3 years in the Air Corps and came back to thrill American movie audiences in such pictures as Till the Clouds Roll By and Possessed. And Van, we're happy to have you with us tonight. You know, we've been told that the sort of movie part you like is something good and something different. Well, we believe our story tonight just fits your prescription.
Yes, it does, Les. Even the title. Why keep your heart in cool storage? By the way, that advice might very well lead to Hallmark cards.
You're ahead of me, Van. I was going to lead up to the subject of Hallmark and those three words that assure folks of getting the best greeting cards.
You don't have to tell me, Les. I know. You turn the card over and look on the back for those three identifying words. A Hallmark card.
And those three little words, a Hallmark card, tell your friends you cared enough to send the very best. Ladies and gentlemen, the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you a wonderful story of one man's Thanksgiving as they present on the Reader's Digest radio edition, Why Keep Your Heart in Cold Storage, starring Van Heflin.
This all happened last November. Last November, I was just out of the Army. And out of work, too. Ever been in that condition? It made me act in a way I never acted before. I got so my eyes avoided people, my shoulders were hunched over. And no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't smile with more than one side of my face at a time. Not that I tried very hard. What I had in my soul, I had bitterness, that's what. All right, that's the way it was with me. I was hitching rides one day, and when no rides came, I went up to the door of this tiny farmhouse on Highway 63.
Hello, son.
Oh? Have you got a room I could sleep in tonight?
Why, certainly, son. Come in.
Wait a minute. I can't pay.
I said come in, son.
Okay.
Sit down.
Thanks.
Are you hungry?
Did you hear me when I said that I didn't have any money?
You hear me and I ask if you were hungry?
Yeah.
Are you?
Yes, but I haven't any money.
Well, there's cheese on the table and bread. And, well, here's a pitcher of milk.
You're a pretty wonderful guy, you know that?
Thanks. Was it, Army or Navy?
Army.
Worked since you were out?
About 2 days. Odd jobs.
That's strange. Didn't you have a job before you went in the Army?
I didn't go back to it.
That's very interesting.
Interesting.
Yes, if you didn't go back to a job that was waiting for you. This was in your hometown, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's very interesting that a young fellow like you wouldn't want to go back to his hometown.
Say, I like you all right, mister, but you're pretty curious, aren't you?
Yes, it's my greatest virtue.
Virtue?
Virtue.
I didn't go back home because nobody wanted me back home.
Parents?
Yeah, two of them.
And they don't want you?
Nope.
Girlfriend?
Not anymore.
That's too bad. Now, whose fault was it you broke up?
Oh, it was my fault. I let the Army draft me, didn't I? I went away. I went to all those foreign places for a vacation without her, the Solomons, New Guinea, the Russell Islands. It was my fault.
Jealous, aren't you?
I am not jealous.
My mistake. More milk?
No, thanks. Look, could I see that room that you were going to lend me?
Yeah, it's right this way. You're tired already.
I slept 3 hours last night in a barn.
Well, here's a room. It's a good bed, I think.
Looks wonderful to me.
I'll leave you. Be sure to sleep well. You'll need your strength tomorrow.
Now, for what?
For the job I'm going to get you. Good night.
His name was Green. I didn't know until I met him that people could be the way he was. A combination of village gossip and blooming saint. But that was Green, all right. The village gossip part of him kept on prying into my affairs, and the saint, God bless him, found me a job.
Well, Harold, here's the young man I telephoned you about last night.
Okay, Mr. Green. We can put him to work in the ship room.
Oh, you can start tomorrow.
Thank you very much. And look, Mr. Green, I'll never forget this.
All right.
Look, I wonder if you could tell me where I could find a room in town.
Well, Miss Blanchard's is good. You take the 3rd Street on the left.
Wait a minute. You won't need all these directions, son, for another week or two.
Why not?
You won't be paid for another week or two.
About a week and a half.
So you'd better come back to my house.
Well, look, I don't want to bother you, Mr. Green.
It'd bother me terribly to feel you were sleeping in a barn for the next week and a half. So you come on back to my house.
That was the saint part of him. When we got back to the farmhouse, the village gossip took over. Did I say village gossip? He was also something like a cop getting a 3rd degree. I don't know why I took it.
Well, you have a job now.
Yeah.
I suppose you'll be writing home to tell the folks about it.
Who says so?
Where is your hometown?
It doesn't matter.
Did the girl get married?
How do I know what she did?
You know what she did.
Do I? Of
course you do. You're too interested not to have found out. You're too jealous not to torture yourself for finding out.
All right, so I know and so you don't know, and so that's the way it's going to stay.
You going to write to her or just your folks about the new job?
I'm not going to write to anybody.
Why not?
I told you, nobody back there is interested in me.
Your parents aren't interested in you.
Look, you seem to be all in a sweat about my personal affairs, and the only reason I'm bothering with your questions is that you've done me a great favor.
I don't mean to pry.
Well, but you are prying, and the worst part of it is that I've said enough to give you the wrong idea, and I've got to go on and tell you this much more. It's not my parents' fault. They're not unnatural parents. They're not interested in me because I haven't been a good son. That's all.
In what way were you not a good son?
I was a bum.
Before the war, of course.
That's right.
Tried one job after another, I suppose, and gave them all up.
Yeah, that's it.
And your parents didn't like that.
Well, would you like it if you were my parents?
Like it? No. Be interested in you? Yes. Did you write to them during the war?
Some.
Did they write to you?
Yes.
Well, now tell me one thing. Do your parents know where you are now?
They have no idea where I am.
I'll bet I know why you don't tell them. I'll bet it's because if they knew, they'd come around pestering you. Isn't that it?
Well, what if it is?
It is, that is.
Of course it is. I don't want them bothering their heads about me. What of it?
Nothing of it. Except that if they were really not interested in you, it'd be all right to tell them where you are. They wouldn't bother you at all if they were not interested in you.
But I...
Well?
Oh, you... Look, you get me all mixed up.
I'm afraid you got yourself all mixed up, son.
I broke away from him and went into the room that he had given me. I tried to think of something else, but I just didn't care about anything except the fact that I was all mixed up. He was right, I was mixed up. After a while, I began to want to talk about it. I went out into the living room. Now, wouldn't you know it, Mr. Green didn't seem to want to talk at all.
I'm writing letters, Jordan.
Oh, sorry. Be quiet.
Thanksgiving letters.
Huh?
While I'm finishing up this one, I wish you'd read that one there on the table. See if I spelled and punctuated correctly.
Yeah, sure, huh? Glad to. Dear Miss Austin, you may be surprised to hear from an old pupil, but I write to several people each year at Thanksgiving time to let them know how thankful I am for what they did for me. You may have forgotten me, Miss Austin, but I was a student of yours in the 6th grade, 1916. I'm writing to thank you because in that year you got me interested in literature. Every day since I left you, literature has been a delight to me, and I thank you. Yours gratefully, Marky Green.
Hey, look, what is this?
Now, what's the matter? Something misspelled? Something ungrammatical?
No, but what kind of a letter is this?
What's a Thanksgiving letter?
I never heard of Thanksgiving letters.
Well, not many people have. I invented them.
What's the idea of
them? Well, doesn't the letter explain that? They're just for the purpose of giving thanks to people who've done something for you.
Well, what's the matter?
You seem to resent the idea.
No. I don't resent it. It's just that it makes me ashamed.
Why?
Well, I never think of things like that.
I don't have a copyright on your idea.
Well, I don't have anybody to write to anyways.
Nobody to thank?
No, nobody to thank.
I see. You know, funny thing. Last year I wrote 4 Thanksgiving letters, and all 4 were to relatives. But never before last year had I realized I had anything to thank those relatives for. But I did have something to thank them for. I thank one of them for spanking me once. could you hand that letter back?
Oh, yeah.
Thanks. I think I'll go mail it. Want to come along?
Oh, no, thanks. Now, I'll stay here. I've got some things to think about.
Just a moment with the second act of tonight's story from the pages of the Reader's Digest, America's favorite magazine, presented by the makers of Hallmark cards, America's favorite greeting cards. And now here's Tom Shirley.
Now that Thanksgiving is here, there are only 23 more shopping days till Christmas. Have you been wondering what to give the youngsters on your Christmas list? Well, here's just what you've been looking for, a treasure chest of Hallmark dolls. It's a beautifully made chest, rich in colors of gold, silver, and jewels, with a lid that swings back and a removable tray filled with Hallmark dolls from the land of make-believe. A wondrous parade of familiar friends from fairyland. Hallmark dolls are greeting cards, but more, they're 8-inch dolls that stand alone, and on the inside is their own little story told in gay rhyme. You can get the treasure chest with 8 different Hallmark dolls for $3, or with 16 different dolls for $5. See them tomorrow at any of the friendly stores that carry Hallmark cards. And now, once again, here is your Hallmark host, Les Tremaine.
Our program continues now with the second act of tonight's story, Why Keep Your Heart in Cold Storage, starring Van Heflin.
I had some things to think about. I hadn't been a good son. I'd been a bum. And I sat wondering if one of the reasons why I was a poor son might be the fact that never once did I thank my parents for what they'd done for me. I thought back to a lot of things. I thought back to my father first. I thought of how it had been with my father and me. I remembered, for instance...
Well, son, how do you like the new job?
That job? I don't like it.
Well, I know it isn't the greatest job in the world, but it's steady. And you'll learn a trade while you're at it.
Yeah?
Of course.
Well, I'm not going to learn any trade.
What do you mean?
I mean I quit the job.
Oh, son. I had a hard time getting at that job.
Yeah, I know, Dad. I know. I'm sorry, but it just isn't for me.
Yes, I can see that. But I want to know why.
Well, what difference does it make?
It makes a great deal of difference to me. You've got to tell me what it was, son. You've got to tell me what made you quit that job.
Well, why should I?
Because I've got to know what to steer away from when I get you your next job.
That was my old man. I never did tell him exactly what was the matter, but he never lost patience with me. Now, sitting in Mr. Green's house, took pen and paper and I wrote a letter to my old man. Dear Dad, this letter is to thank you just before Thanksgiving time for being you, for never giving up on me. I hope sometime to justify your faith in me. But I haven't yet, so I won't let you know where I am. To my father. It wasn't any easier to write to my mother. I thought of how it had been with my mother and me.
Well, I thought you'd never get up.
Yeah, well, I was up late last night.
I know. Jordan, I just wish you'd stay home 1 or 2 nights a week.
Yeah, well, I always intend to, but...
I know. What do you want for breakfast? Shall I fry you some eggs? Or would you like some pancakes? I've got some batter here.
Eggs, orange juice, eggs, coffee, toast.
I just hope you won't be late for work.
Oh, didn't Dad tell you?
Tell me what?
I got through on that job.
Jordan.
Now, look, Ma, I hope you won't lecture me.
No, I won't lecture you. I'd like to ask you a couple of questions, though.
Okay.
Why don't you bring some of your friends home here some night?
I don't know.
You know.
Well, because you wouldn't like them. You and Dad, you wouldn't approve of them.
That's good.
What do you mean?
I mean, it's good that you can say that. It's good that you can be honest. It's the first step toward coming to your senses. No lectures. No more questions. You'll be all right. But, Jordan.
Yeah?
I'm a working woman. There's a lot to do around this house. I'm afraid since you have no other job to do, you'll have to make breakfast for yourself.
I smiled when I thought of my mother and how she was. And I wrote her. Dear Mom, just before Thanksgiving time, I want to thank you for being wise, for knowing your son, for understanding enough not to say too much, and most of all, for making me prepare my own breakfast. It did me good. Your loving son. There was one more letter to write. This was a tough one. I hadn't met Helen until 2 weeks before they took me into the army.
But we don't need time, Jordan, do we?
But to tell her I love
you?
I knew 5 minutes after I met you, and then I knew.
Slowpoke.
So now listen, you'll wait, huh?
So I'll wait.
You mean, don't you? I need to know it. No, I'm no good without you.
Of course you
no,
are.
No, that's true. Will you spruce me up? Look, I haven't taken a drink. I've stayed on the job. Helen, now, don't kid me. If you went back on me, I'd never come back to this town because I'd be a bum again here without you.
Jordan, look at me.
Helen.
Darling.
That's pretty nice for a fella to remember. And if that was all, it'd be wonderful. But I remember something else. I remember a certain mail call in New Guinea just before we took off over the Owen Stanley mountain range. I remember the letter I got from a pal of mine that day. I went out with your girl last night. I've taken her out a lot. Pretty soft for me, huh? The only reason I didn't desert was that I knew I couldn't swim the Pacific. Oh, well, that was all years ago, and now I had a letter to write. Dear Helen, here it is just before Thanksgiving. And I want to thank you. This isn't sarcasm, or not yet anyway. I have got something to thank you for. I thank you for not letting the bad reputation I had around the hometown get in the way of our friendship. I thank you for treating me like a respectable boy when I was far short of respectable. I thank you for making me over in 2 weeks. It doesn't matter that your feelings didn't last. How could they? When Bob Hunter wrote and said that he'd been out with you, I knew it was over. But I want to assure you that what you did for me, that wasn't ever forgotten. I love... No, cross that out. Yours sincerely, or yours respectfully, yours, Jordan.
Hello, Jordan.
Hello, Mr. Bean. Are you going to town?
A little later. Why?
Well, would you mail these letters for me?
Certainly, sir.
I took your advice.
My advice? Or what advice did I give?
About the Thanksgiving letters.
Oh, well, I just told you what I do. I wasn't giving you advice.
Not much, you weren't. Anyway, I wrote some Thanksgiving letters.
Who to?
One to each parent and one to...
That girl?
That girl, yes.
I'm glad. You decided to let him know all about you, then?
No, I don't give him an address, and I don't tell him what I'm doing.
Well, that's your business, I suppose.
Exactly. It's my business.
Well, all right, I'll mail a letter.
Thanksgiving letters, they do people good. And they're like testing bread on the water. They come right back and do you good, too. Like in my own case. By the time Thanksgiving Day rolled around, I had a room of my own in town, but Mr. Green invited me to the farm for Thanksgiving dinner, so...
Oh, hello, Jordan.
Hello, Mr. Green. Well, can I help you with the dinner?
No, I've got it under control.
Oh, it smells wonderful.
And one thing you can do, though, you can move your truck out of that room you stayed in when you were here.
What do you mean?
I mean, you left a lot of truck in that room, and I'm not going to clean it up for you.
Well, you're crazy.
All right, I'm crazy.
Well, I'm going to go see. No.
Yes, son. It's your old man.
And your old lady. And me, Jordan.
Well, but, Mom... Dad, it's so wonderful to see you. I'm...
Don't talk, son. Just, oh, darling.
It's good to be here. It's good to see you, son.
But how did you get here? How did all this happen?
Mr. Green wrote us a note.
He said he was a busybody. I wish everybody was a busybody like Mr. Green.
Dad, Mom, listen, I want you to know that I'm trying. I've got a job, and I'm trying to hold on to it. When I had it for 6 months without quitting, I was going
to... I know. But you didn't have to wait 6 months, son.
Jordan, you haven't said anything to Helen yet.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Hello, Helen.
Hello, Jordan. Hello, darling. Well, no need of us pretending. You two have things to talk about. Pa, come on out and help Mr. Green with the dinner.
Hey, no. Well?
You can go out there, too, if you want to.
No. No, you came to see me. I think we ought to talk.
All right.
There's Bob Hunter.
I think he's all right. I've been out with him several times, Jordan.
That's not news.
I'm sorry. I came here to say one thing to you. I went out with Bob Hunter while you were at war. We went to a movie. It was a good movie. I wanted to see it. He invited me. I'd been at home every night since you left, so I said I'd go. He knew I was your girl. He respected that fact.
Hmm. You have a good time?
Yes. After that, we went out again, more than once.
And you still do?
Yes, I do, once in a while.
You enjoy yourself?
Yes. Is there something wrong with that?
No. Have a good time. Get married. Walk down the path of life into the sunset together, you and Bob.
We won't do that, George.
No?
No. Because Bob still knows whenever he takes me out that he's taking out your girl. Jordan, you never wrote. You never came home. But I'm still your girl.
Helen.
Darling.
Helen, look, I've been rotten.
No. But you told me once that you needed me.
Yeah, well, I still do.
But, oh, darling, you forgot that I need you, too.
That's all. That's the story. Some very nice things happened to me and my parents and my... my former girlfriend, my present wife, because of my writing some Thanksgiving letters. I'm going to write some next year, too. One in particular. To an old busybody who sticks his nose in other people's business. God bless him. Thank you, Van Heflin, for a great part, beautifully played.
Well, this steak gave me a real kick, Les.
Well, what's on for next week?
Well, something you ought to like. A story about the wide open spaces.
That's for me.
And a beautiful young girl.
That's for me.
And what happens when they meet?
That I want to hear. Well, tell me, who plays the lead?
Lovely young Peggy Ann Garner.
Well, I'll be with you, all right.
I hope you all will, ladies and gentlemen. Next Thursday, the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you a story of the horse country that's human and funny and great entertainment. It's called Sonny Goes West, and the star is Peggy Ann Garner.
Each week, there's a new Hallmark doll of the week, and this week, we present Curly Locks, whose beauty won a prince's heart. Strawberries trim her lovely dress, and her bright yellow hat is a real plume. She'll win the heart of every child on your Christmas list. Like all the other Hallmark dolls, Curly Locks is 8 inches high, stands alone, and you can mail her as a greeting card. Or you can send a whole treasure chest of Hallmark dolls. Curly Locks, Cinderella, 8 different Hallmark dolls, excitingly hidden away in a gorgeous treasure chest. And the whole gift of treasure chest with 8 different dolls costs only $3. With 16 dolls, only $5. Thrill all the youngsters on your Christmas list by giving a treasure chest of Hallmark dolls. Van Heflin can currently be seen opposite Lana Turner in Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's production, Green Dolphin Street. In tonight's story, Mr. Heflin was supported by Will Gear in the role of Mr. Green. Why Keep Your Heart in Cold Storage was dramatized by Robert Sonadella and was based on a story by William L. Stidger, as it appeared in the Reader's Digest, America's favorite magazine. The Hallmark program was directed by Mark Loeb, with music especially composed by Jack Miller. This is Tom Shirley speaking for the makers of Hallmark greeting cards. Buy Hallmark dolls where you buy Hallmark cards. Remember,
that was Why Keep Your Heart in Cold Storage, an original air date the 27th of November 1947. Again, that was the Radio Reader's Digest. That series began in 1942, and I don't know how long it lasted. The 57, maybe? I had it. Yeah, to 53. The Hallmark Playhouse, when Hallmark sponsorship, 19, I don't know. <laughs> it was on CBS. It was originally sponsored by Campbell's Soup and then Hallmark Cards. I think, I don't know if the donation drive is still on, but I'm going to go ahead and take care of a PSA.
WMFO annual drive is in effect. We're looking to raise $5,000 to continue to keep your freeform station playing your favorite music. WMFO is a nonprofit station with staff, students, and community members who volunteer their time to bring you their favorite music and shows. We need your support to keep it all running, so donate now by logging on to donate.wmfo.org. That's donate.wmfo.org. Or mail a check payable to trustees of Tufts College. Send it to WMFO, P.O. Box 65, Medford, Massachusetts, 02155. Thank you for your support from all of us here at your freeform station, 91.5 WMFO.
Okay. Is that taken care of? I haven't checked what the total was, if there was a final total yet on the donation drive, but any contribution helps. The second part of the show is an Adventures of Sam Spade. That the series originally ran on ABC in 1946, and then switched to CBS from 1946 to 1949. Its creation is credited to Dashiell Hammett, based on his character from his 1930 novel, The Maltese Falcon. This is called The Terrified Turkey Caper, part of a Thanksgiving, pre-Thanksgiving broadcast here on the Grand Hour. Set an original air date, the 24th of November, 1950. Thank you.
National Broadcasting Company presents The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective.
Sam Spade Detective Agency.
Tis I, sweetheart.
Sam! Oh, I was worried to death. This office, glass all over the floor, holes in the wall.
That was just business going on as usual during altercations, Eph.
Well, what was it all about, Sam?
They tried, Effie, just tried to pluck my feathers and cook my goose.
On Thanksgiving, too. How could they?
Oh, they were a mean lot.
Are you all right?
Hale and hearty. Every giblet in place and not a feather ruffled. Did you have a nice Thanksgiving?
Oh, it was heavenly. Mama had a toast, candy jam.
Hard cider?
A little.
Come clean, Effie.
Well, I had two glasses.
Ah.
Everyone was there. Cousin Gertie, Dwight, Mrs. Floss. I was disappointed when you didn't show up, Sam. Did you ever?
At the Helping Hand Rescue Mission, where there's plenty of free parking and never a cover charge. For further details, consult the report, which I will presently be down to dictate, on a tasty chronicle of foul play. The Terrified Turkey Caper.
For NBC, William Spear, radio's outstanding producer, director of mystery and crime drama, brings you the greatest private detective of them all in The Adventures of Sam Spade.
Sam Spade!
Oh, you were waiting for me.
Having Thanksgiving dinner at a rescue mission where Mama cooked a perfectly wonderful...
Thank your mother for me, Eph. Tell her I'll be over to break wishbones with her tonight. And to atone for my social indifferences, here's a little something I brought for you.
Oh, Sam! You shouldn't have. It's beautiful. What is it?
A blunderbuss.
A blunder what?
Bus, as in step to the rear of.
Oh, well, what does it do?
Shoots, Eph. It's a gun. Our founding fathers used it in foraging for feathered food when they settled this abundant continent.
And it's mine.
To do with what you will.
Well, where did you get it?
Pencil poise?
Yes, Sam. Who gave it to
you? Pad open?
Oh, yes, but I don't know.
Knees crossed?
Did you meet a founding father?
Don't peek. Date, November 24th, 1952. Detective Lieutenant I.C. Kelsey, Homicide Detail, San Francisco Police. From Samuel Spade, license number 137596. Subject, Turkey. Dear Kelsey, this was a big week for the cranberry pickers, the butchers, the sage makers, and the stomach pill people. But for private detectives, it was strictly from hunger. My office door opened only twice a day, once to let me in and once to let me out. And when on Wednesday I heard a knock on the door, I went into a paroxysm of delight. Come in! Come in! Come in! Entrez-vous! Entrez-usted! Erine! When I ran out of languages, I got up from behind the desk, walked to the door, and opened it. Standing there was a small, middle-aged man with a pink, bald head. His blue serge suit needed pressing, and he was nervously fingering a strawberry birthmark under his left ear.
Mr. Samuel Spade?
I am.
May I have a moment with you?
You may have several, but not in the corridor. It's not in my lease.
Oh, I'll come in.
Good, good, good. Well?
Well, you'll have to excuse me, Mr. Spade. I've had so few dealings with private detectives, I find it hard to begin.
Well?
Perhaps I shouldn't have come at all. Goodbye.
No, wait a minute. Maybe I can help you.
Well, you see, Oh, what's the use? You won't believe me. Nobody does. I'd really better...
Oh, now, wait. I'll believe you. All I ask is a chance. Now, let's start with your name.
Oh, my name?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, my name. To begin with, you won't believe that. Oh, but I can verify it. Yes, I can. It's on the registration book of the Old Colony Hotel, in the 1943 phone book, and on my old driver's license.
Well, I'll have to know it before I can verify it.
Oh, yes, of course you will. It's Tom.
Well, now that's not so hard to believe.
Oh, you haven't heard the rest of it. It's Tom Turkey. There, you see, I told you wouldn't believe it. I'd better go.
Oh, now, let me be the first to believe you. Now, Mr. Tom, what's your problem?
Oh, dear, that's even harder to explain.
Well, now that I don't believe. But take a breath and jump into it.
Breath, yes. My name is Tom Turkey, and they're going to kill me for Thanksgiving.
Well, I had asked for it, and I had gotten it. And I sat back wondering who had gone to all the trouble to play this funny joke on me. I was looking at my hand to see if there was any itching powder on it where he'd shaken it when my phone rang. I lifted the receiver, swung around in my swivel, and gazed out onto the street. It was Al Kuchel calling, a private eye whose reputation was shadier than a mushroom seller.
Hiya, Spadey.
Al.
Haven't seen much of you lately, Spadey. Have to get together.
Yeah, well, so long.
Wait, I'll tell you why I called. I've had a pest in my office, keeps coming back. Thinks he's a turkey somebody wants to dress. I brushed him, but your name came up, and I just wanted to warn you. He might be in to see you.
I'm confused, Al. I never knew you to turn your back on a buck.
Oh, I don't want any of this one. His buttons are loose. My advice to you is to bounce him.
Well, we've never traded advice before, Kuchu. Why now?
Well, after all, we're in the same racket. If we can't help each other...
Oh, sure, Al, sure. I appreciate it.
Give me a ring. We've got to get together sometime.
Yeah, when I get a free night, we'll jimmy parking meters.
Yeah, we... Huh? Oh, yeah. Parking meters. See you later, Spidey.
I turned back to the desk, and what I saw in front of me was an empty chair. Tom Turkey had taken wing. I got up and walked to the window, and a minute later, I saw him come out of the building downstairs and start to cross the street. And then I saw something else. A large 4-ton truck was tearing down the street, picking up speed. Instinctively, I shouted a warning. And at the last second, Tom Turkey scrambled from in front of the truck and disappeared into the alleyway. The truck roared up the street, and on its side was printed in gold letters, "Haynes, you drive it." There was nothing to say it wasn't coincidence, this near mishap. But somehow I found myself intrigued and wanting to hear more of the little guy's story. He said the Old Colony Hotel... On the way, I stopped at the library, found an old 1943 phone book, and looked. He was listed. Thomas Turkey, it said. Out of curiosity, I rang the number.
Hello?
I wonder if you can help me. I'm inquiring about a Mr. Turkey.
Turkey? This ain't his number no more.
I know.
Haven't had any calls for him for years. Screwy name.
Yeah, I know.
I knew a woman named Rabbit once. Mrs. Rabbit.
About Turkey, could you remember what he looked like?
I don't. Hey, Manny, what Turkey look like?
Huh?
Yeah. Small man, around 50. Nice fellow, Manny says.
Strawberry under his left ear?
Strawberry under his left ear, Manny.
Yeah,
strawberry under his left ear.
Well, thank you, madam, for your information, and thanks to Manny.
Well, you're welcome, but I don't know what you're going to do with it. Old man Turkey's dead. Been dead for years.
Curiouser and curiouser, I thought. They had described the man who came to my office 20 minutes ago. And now he'd been dead for years. I continued on to the Old Colony Hotel. Room, 75 cents, it said. Tom's room was 114.
Who is it?
Sam Spade.
Oh, come in, Mr. Spade.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I ran away. I didn't think you really believed me.
Well, I'm not sure I do yet. Tell me, was that truck an accident?
Oh, I don't think so, no. They made 3 attempts before to kill me. Somebody tried to push me in front of a train, and then a wheelchair full of cement dropped off a building and just missed me, and then I was shot at.
So who were they, and why would they want to kill you?
I don't know. I just don't know.
Look, let's tack.
Tack?
Tack. I dialed your old phone number, and the people who answered said you're dead.
Oh, a lot of people think I'm dead.
Yeah. Look, do you still want me to work for you?
Oh, yes. Yes, please.
Well, you'll have to tell me more then. I can't...
I guess I'd better tell you everything. Oh, it's hard to talk about, Mr. Spade. It's not easy to admit to someone you've been a foolish man. You see, I just turned 50. I was quite tired of the life I'd led. Proper, dull, and unfruitful, except in money. My business was wearing, and so was my wife, Henriette.
This has a traditional ring.
Anyway, to make it short... I decided to run away. One day I drove to work. I parked my car in the middle of the Bay Bridge where the suicide note left it and disappeared.
Where did you go?
Oh, all over the world. I took a job on a boat. I did. On a boat. And then I settled in São Paulo, Brazil, under another name.
Now you're back. Why?
Maybe I got lonely. Maybe I got wiser. Maybe I felt I paid enough for my mistakes. Let's just say I'm back. I want to be with Henrietta.
Have you seen her?
I checked into this hotel and wrote her a letter saying I wasn't dead. I was back in San Francisco, and I wanted to come back to her if she still would have me. But I told her I wouldn't bother her unless she wanted to see me, that she could contact me here. That was a week ago.
And you haven't heard from her?
No, and almost right away these attempts on my life began.
I see. All right, what's her address?
3118 Monroe. Oh, she's taken her maiden name again. Black. Henrietta Black.
Come on, let's go.
No, I'm not going to see her until she asks me.
Well, look, you're going to my apartment. Nobody will bother you there.
And you're going to see Henrietta?
That's right.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Spade. You do believe me. I think I'm really ready to face the world again now.
I deposited Tom in my apartment with instructions to open the door for no one but me, and then I proceeded to 3118 Monroe in the high rent district. I was ushered through a comely portico by a Japanese maid who told me to wait in a study heavy with mahogany. In a moment, two people came in. The woman wore a black dress, silver pendant, flat shoes, and a complexion the color of apple meat. She was Miss Henrietta Black and or Mrs. Tom Turkey. The man turned out to be Leander Luce, the lady's attorney, business manager, and canasta partner.
You say you have something important to discuss with me, Mr. Spade?
I do.
I hope you don't mind my asking Mr. Luce to be here.
Not at all.
Well?
Mrs. Turkey, I just talked to your husband, Tom.
Mr. Spade, if you please.
I say something?
A rather feeble attempt at comedy, Mr. Spade.
Well, I wasn't trying for laughs. You are Mrs. Turkey, aren't you?
I was.
You undoubtedly still are.
I've expected to hear another one of these cruel jokes about my name.
At Thanksgiving time, Mr. Spade, someone was always going to stuff Tom, baste him, dress him, slice him.
This season, they're going to kill him.
They are not going to kill him. He is already dead.
He's not dead, Mrs. Turkey, and you should know it.
I should.
Yes, he sent you a letter saying he was back in San Francisco and wanted to see you.
Mr. Spade, this has gone absolutely far enough.
Not quite. What about the letter?
I know of no such letter.
I see. Well, thank you for your time. I'm sorry I bothered you.
Yeah, you used bad judgment in coming in the first place.
Yes, maybe you're right. There was falsehood in this someplace, Lieutenant, and it stuck out like a fat girl in slacks. The only thing to do was to go back to my apartment, get Tom Turkey, and confront Mrs. T with her husband in the flesh. But when I got back to my apartment building, I spotted in rapid succession, one, an ambulance, two, a police car, and upstairs, outside my half-opened apartment door, I spotted three, you.
I've been expecting you.
What's going on, Kelsey?
Yes, serious, Sam, serious.
Who's that bald-headed man moving around the apartment?
That's McCracken, the new medical examiner, checking a stiff on your rug.
I stepped around you, Lieutenant, and pushed the door all the way open. I saw McCracken kneeling over the body and a couple of men from homicide taking photos. I moved into the room feeling nothing good. A little guy had given me a job, and while I was yakking with his wife, somebody got to him. And in my apartment, where I'd stashed him. McCracken stood up, and I looked down at the body. Then I looked again. Who I saw wasn't Tom Turkey at all. It was the late Private Eye, Al Kuchel.
You are listening to the weekly adventure of radio's most famous detective, Sam Spade. You Friday fans of Sam Spade, there's mystery on Saturday evening, too, on NBC. Tomorrow, the man called X sets out on another mission of danger and intrigue in some far-off corner of the earth. Herbert Marshall stars as the man called X, a man without a name who travels the world over protecting his country's interests. He lives by his wits and his business is danger. He is the man called X, tomorrow over most NBC stations. For Top Sunday Listening, it's another broadcast of The Big Show on NBC. This Sunday, your stars include Fred Allen, Jack Carson, Mindy Carson, Ed Archie Gardner, Ed Wynn, and many, many more. And Tallulah is your MC as usual. This Sunday, it's The Big Show on NBC. And now back to the Terrified Turkey Caper, tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
While the men from Homicide were taking pictures, etc., you and I, Lieutenant, were going round and round on the question, if I didn't kill the man found in my room, who did? And you were sufficiently impressed with my insults, Kelsey, not to hold me for the murder. We bowed to each other and I left. Thinking back to the truck that had almost run Turkey down, I went to the Haynes U Drive truck rental garage.
Yeah? What do you... what do you want?
I'm a detective. Could you give me a list of names for everybody who rented a truck from you during the past few days?
Sure.
He handed me a big registration book, and I read every name for the past week. For the first 5 days, they all seemed to be nice, normal, abnormal names. And then, under the rentals for the day before, was the name of John Smith. John had given his address as 7200 Kearney. And I happen to know that Kearney only goes up to 2000. The dispatcher said that Smith had returned the truck about 3 hours before. And he remembered him as an ugly, heavy-set, and rough-voiced character who looked like an ex-longshoreman. They had already washed the truck, so the fingerprints were all loused up.
It's Mr. Spade again.
Look, I'd like to speak with Mrs. Turk... Miss Black, if you don't mind.
Come in. Come in.
Thank you.
This way. Into the den.
Right.
Well, I was sure you'd look into this affair a little more and realize that it was just a blind alley. A hoax of some kind.
Where's Miss Black?
Oh, she's upstairs, lying down. The whole affair has upset her, and she asked not to be disturbed. I think the wisest course of action for you, Mr. Spade, is just to let the matter drop.
You can't let a murder just drop, Mr. Luce. The police wouldn't hear of it.
Huh? Murder? Who?
An unfrocked private detective named Al Kuchel.
Well, what does this have to do with Henrietta Black?
Al Kuchel called me earlier today and said that Tom Turkey was a crackpot, a little man with delusions. He tried to top me off taking his case.
He sounds like a perceiving man.
Well, he didn't perceive ending up in my apartment with a bullet in his head.
Well, that's too bad, but I still don't
I left
see...
Tom Turkey in my apartment for safekeeping, and when I returned, he was gone and Kuchel was dead.
Well, that explains itself, obviously. This detective knew that Tom Turkey was a phony. And Turkey killed him.
It can figure that way. And a number of other ways.
Mr. Spade, I have no desire to sit here trading subtleties with you. As yet, no one has demonstrated that the real Tom Turkey actually exists. Alive. Now, until you do have something more concrete and less mythological, Miss Black requests that you do not come around opening up old wounds.
You've made an eloquent point. Just tell me one thing.
If I can.
When did Tom Turkey disappear? I mean, what month, what day?
It was, 1943, November. But I'm not sure of the exact day. I think it was in the third week.
Could it have been on Thanksgiving?
Very possibly, very possibly.
I returned thoughtfully to my office and did a little rapid mental arithmetic and came up with a number 7. From November 23rd, 1943 to November 23rd, 1950 was 7 years to the day. And I pondered this. What did the number 7 mean to the life or death of Tom Turkey? I had just hit upon the answer and was crying Eureka when my office door opened, unknocked, and a visitor came in unannounced. He was ugly, heavy set, and looked like an ex-longshoreman. I waited to see if the voice checked.
You, Spade?
Who shall I say is calling?
Captain John Smith. And here's my calling card.
The first bullet grazed my shoulder and tore the padding out of my coat. The second bullet hit the water cooler and it crashed over, water and all on top of me. Where the third bullet hit, I wasn't sure at the time because darkness came rushing through my head like a freight train. When I opened my eyes again, I expected to see St. Peter checking my ID card. But all I saw were the dust balls under my desk and a fly bathing himself in a pool of water spreading slowly over the floor. There was blood on my hand, but it came from a glass cut. I was in shambles, but alive. Captain John Smith had shoved off, obviously thinking his bullets had done their work.
Homicide, Lieutenant Kelsey.
Sam Kelsey, have you found anything more about Tom Turkey?
Nothing, Sam.
Frankly, I'm beginning to wonder if there is such a guy.
Well, clever Kelsey, a few minutes ago, a gorilla by the name, believe it or not, of Captain John Smith just tried to kill me in my office.
Oh, go on, Sam. I find it hard to think.
You find it hard to think, period.
Really, Sam? Did you get him?
No, but my office is a wreck, and there's a hole blasted in my wall big enough to put a basketball in.
What did he use, a bazooka?
I figured dum-dum bullets.
Dum-dum? Well, that's illegal, ain't it?
Kelsey, doesn't it strike you as significant that every attempt on Turkey's life has been vicious, as if someone not only wanted to kill him, but also mutilate him?
Yeah, now that you mention it. Somebody probably wanted to make identification difficult.
Even dead, they didn't want anybody to know who he was. Now, listen carefully, Kelsey. This is real deep. Tom Turkey disappeared on Thanksgiving of 1943. A person has to be missing 7 years before he can be legally dead and his insurance collected. Now, if someone had Turkey insured, they could collect the day after this Thanksgiving, if Turkey didn't show up before.
You mean somebody's trying to kill him for the insurance?
I would say so, Kelsey. I would say so. Now, hurry up and find him. When I put down the phone, I heard a heavy pounding. For a minute, I thought it was in my head, until I turned to face the door, and standing there was a small pilgrim with bandy legs in black stockings, pantaloons, white-collared coat, and stovepipe hat.
Hallelujah!
He wore silver buckles, and what he was pounding on the floor was an 18th-century blunderbuss.
Hallelujah! Have I got the right place?
Well, offhand, I'd say so. If you're looking for Captain John Smith, he just left. Pocahontas is expected any minute.
Now, don't you go trying to confuse me. I'm too thirsty.
What's on your mind, Pilgrim?
Well, I'm looking for a fellow named Dan, Oh, I'm so thirsty, I forgot.
Sam Spade?
Yeah, that's it. Oh, you broke your water bottle, huh?
Yeah.
Good. That stuff poison anyway. Hallelujah. Hey, say, do you happen to have any hard cider around?
Fresh out.
Oh. Hey, I'm kind of thirsty, you know. Any type of corn squeezings?
Here, try this, Dad.
Well, yes.
Good, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You like that, huh? Oh.
Well, follow me. But before we go, do you suppose we could have a little something for the road? It's bitter cold.
I gave him a little, but not too much, because I didn't want him to lose his way. He walked me right down Market Street so he could look in the liquor store windows. He said it gave him a comfortable feeling to know there was so much good in the world. And then we turned right a few blocks until we came to the Helping Hand Mission. Across its gray front, a banner promised special holiday food and comfort to the unfortunate. And on the street in front of it, there was a brass band sending out signals to the fraternity that any minute the great feast of Thanksgiving would begin. The band members and other volunteer workers were all dressed as pilgrims, a quaint conceit. My pilgrim led me to a dark corner of the clubroom, and sitting there unhappily was none other than Tom Turkey.
Hello, Mr. Spade.
Oh, hello, Tom. What happened to my apartment? Why did you run away?
Well, I was afraid. You told me not to answer the door until you came back.
Yeah.
Well, somebody knocked on the door and said it was you, so I opened it, and two men came in.
Tell me, was one of the male Cucho?
Yes, the detective. Yeah. The other man was a big, ugly-looking fellow. And when they saw I was alone, they started arguing.
About what?
Well, the detective said that now that he'd brought the ugly man there, he wanted his money.
Yeah.
The ugly man pulled a gun, and they started to fight. Oh, dear, I slipped out the door. And when I was halfway downstairs, I heard a shot and kept on running.
Well, Al Kuchel is dead.
Oh, my. I thought so. This was the only place I could think of to hide. Oh, when Henrietta finds out I've been mixed up in a murder, she'll never take me back.
Henrietta. Hey, tell me, did your wife ever have any insurance on you?
Oh, before I ran away, she did. A $50,000 policy, but... Oh, that would have lapsed by now.
Maybe. Did it have a suicide clause in it?
A suicide?
Yes.
Well, no. No, it didn't. I remember.
Yeah, you'd like to talk to Henrietta, wouldn't you? All right, here's her phone number. Call her up and tell her where you are.
Oh, dear, I don't think I could. I'm too frightened.
You've got to do something to help yourself. If you don't, by midnight, you might be a cold turkey.
Oh.
I'm sorry, it just slipped out.
All right, I'll do it.
Well, he went and made the call. When he returned, he said that a man had answered who said Henrietta would come down and pick Tom up. He didn't want to wait, but I sat on him. The pilgrim brought us a dish of turkey dinner, saying he couldn't stand food himself, and we munched a spell. In a little while, a limousine pulled up in front of the mission with someone in back whom I couldn't see. The chauffeur stepped out and came in inquiring for Tom Turkey. It was Captain John Smith himself. When he saw me, a look of shocked surprise came over his unhandsome face. Hoping to catch him off balance, I dove at him. It was the liveliest thing that has happened at the Helping Hand Mission in years, and we had a good harvest, too. Money was even changing hands. When I heard the odds starting to go against me, I realized I'd better come up with something.
Here, use this, partner.
And I did. The bandy-legged pilgrim shoved his blunderbuss right in my hand. And I swung. Smith dropped like pheasant on the wing. I looked up. The passenger from the limousine was just coming in.
What's the meaning of this?
It means, Leander Luce, that you're not going to carve Tom Turkey up for your Thanksgiving insurance policy.
Hallelujah! Drumstick, anyone?
End of report.
Sam, I don't understand.
Well, it's as plain as the cranberry stain on your dress, Seth.
Hmm?
Luce, as Henrietta's business manager, had her power of attorney. And secretly, he kept making the payments on Tom Turkey's insurance policies.
Oh, and then he'd collect for Henrietta and keep the money himself.
Effie, sometimes your lightning mind frightens me. Now, go type that up. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. There's fun and laughs with the chimes later tonight when Ed Gardner stars in Duffy's Tavern. As usual, Duffy won't be there, but Archie the manager will definitely be on hand to serve his blue plate special of grilled English language. This Sunday, the big show comes your way again. Tallulah will be your hostess, and the stars include Fred Allen, Jack Carson, Ed Wynn, Meredith Wilson, and many, many more. It's the big show, Sunday, on NBC.
The man who killed Al Cucho and tried to kill you, was his name really Captain John Smith?
Now, Effie, could we have a Thanksgiving caper without a Captain John Smith? It wouldn't be right.
It was a coincidence, wasn't it?
Well, if you promise not to tell anyone.
I won't.
His real name was Michael Giuseppe Yablonsky Smith. I called him John for short.
You're so kind.
Are we going over to your mother's for cold turkey snacks?
Well, all right, but I don't think there'll be much left.
Oh?
You see, my cousin Gertie couldn't find her little boy. And Mother phoned and said they just found him.
Mm-hmm.
He was inside the turkey, eating his way out.
Effie, is there no way to curb that tongue of yours?
There's one way.
Well, come here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, with an original air date of the 24th of November, 1950. That was pretty interesting. Pretty interesting. You can hear it still playing in the background, can't you? Well, whatever. I can't stop that. Hold on a second. Sorry about that. Again, that was an original air date of the 24th of November, 1950. The Adventures of Sam Spade. That was, I believe that was on NBC, or it originally was on ABC. It started out on ABC in 1946, 13 episodes, then went to CBS from 1946 to 1949. I believe that was on NBC. Those are the chimes, because that has an air date of 1950. To the caller, I'm sorry. The phones are erratic, have minds of their own. I tried to pick up. I apologize. I didn't try and call back. Coming up.